Akatra Foundation presents the Akatra Dialogue, an exploration of the world's greatest thinkers and ideas. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akatra AI. Welcome, everyone. Today, we're diving into a really substantial piece of work, Bruce Springsteen's autobiography, Born to Run.
Yeah, it's quite something, over 500 pages, and it's not just, you know, a celebrity tell-all. It's incredibly honest.
Definitely. It's a deep look into the man they call Boss. But who is Bruce Springsteen beyond the icon?
Well, born Bruce Frederick Joseph Springsteen in Freehold, New Jersey. He's obviously a singer-songwriter, a massive musician, but really for 5 decades he's been much more.
Like what?
A poet of sorts, certainly a social commentator, even a philosopher of the American experience, all channeled through rock and roll.
And why is his story, this particular book, so significant now?
Because it peels back the layers of myth. It shows the real journey, the struggles, the drive, the internal battles behind the anthems we all know. It's deeply human.
So let's get into that journey, the formative years. Where does it all begin for him?
It starts in 1950s Freehold, New Jersey. He paints this picture of an industrial town, calling it soil, both fertile and troubled.
Fertile and troubled, I like that. And his parents were key figures, right? But quite different.
Very different. His dad, Douglas, was often quiet, brooding, struggled with depression, unstable work, that whole sort of working class instability.
Okay.
And then his mom, Adele, she was the opposite pole, full of optimism, strong Catholic faith, really the emotional and financial rock of the family.
That contrast must have been intense growing up.
Absolutely. And you see how that dynamic, especially the complex relationship with his father's silence and pain, just profoundly shaped Bruce's view of the world. And obviously, his art.
It's like the raw material was right there in his house.
Exactly. And then comes this lightning strike moment he talks about.
Ah, Elvis.
Right? He's 7 years old, sees Elvis Presley on the Ed Sullivan Show, and bam, it's like a calling.
And his mom recognizes this.
She does. She sees that spark, scrapes together the money, and gets him his first guitar. A huge moment. It wasn't just a toy. It shifted his whole life's direction.
It's amazing how those early things stick.
It really is. What's fascinating, looking back through the book, is how those seeds, the father-son thing, the working-class setting, the Elvis jolt, were planted so early. Unconsciously, maybe.
Yeah.
But they became the deep well he'd draw from for everything that came later, giving voice to those specific struggles and dreams he saw all around him.
But it wasn't like he was a model student heading for college or anything.
Oh, definitely not. He writes about feeling totally alienated in high school. Formal education just wasn't his thing.
So music became the escape?
It became everything. His salvation, really. He started playing in local bands like the Castiles, and then the Asbury Park scene became crucial.
That legendary boardwalk scene.
Yeah, and he even made this conscious choice, a really big one, to fail his physical for the Vietnam draft.
Wow.
It was basically him saying, this is it. Music is my life's work. There's no plan B.
So Asbury Park was his real education.
That's a great way to put it. The boardwalk was his university. That's where he didn't just learn chords. He learned how to watch people, how to listen, how to tell stories.
Giving voice to the people he knew.
Exactly. Taking their everyday lives, their struggles, their small joys, and turning them into something bigger, something universal. He really honed his craft there.
Okay, so he finds his voice.
Yeah.
But the path to actual success, like record deals and hits, wasn't smooth sailing at all, was it?
Not even close. I mean, he gets signed to Columbia Records in 1972, which is huge, thanks to the legendary John Hammond, who discovered Dylan and Aretha Franklin.
Right, big deal.
Huge deal. But then the first two albums, Greetings from Asbury Park to Jay and The Wild, The Innocent, and The E Street Shuffle, they get good reviews. People recognize the talent, but commercially, they kind of fizzle.
So immense pressure builds up.
Immense. He's got this amazing talent. The label knows it, but he's not breaking through. The clock is ticking.
Which leads us to Born to Run.
Exactly. That album becomes everything. He poured 14 months into making it. 14 grueling months in the studio.
Obsessing over every little detail.
Totally. Layering sounds, building that famous wall of sound texture he was hearing in his head. It was this really complex, almost orchestral vision for rock music, way beyond what most bands were doing.
He literally called it the album that would make or break him.
He did. And he says in the book that the process nearly destroyed him, physically and emotionally. Just relentless drive.
Looking at the bigger picture, you really see that thread, don't you? That dedication that borders on self-destruction almost.
It's there right from the start. And when Born to Run finally hits, and it hits big, it's this massive validation. But it also brings this new weight.
being called the future of rock and roll.
Yeah, imagine that label. For someone already prone to perfectionism, that's a heavy burden to carry. Suddenly, the expectations are sky high.
And this is also when the E Street Band really comes together as that legendary unit.
Right. He emphasizes they weren't just hired guns. They were a gang, a brotherhood. He even calls it a sacred vow.
That connection was so visible on stage.
Especially with Clarence the Big Man Clemons on saxophone. Bruce calls him his musical brother. Their dynamic, that interplay, became such a core part of the whole Springsteen mythos. Finding your tribe, you know?
Absolutely. So after Born to Run, his artistry keeps evolving.
Definitely. You get Darkness on the Edge of Town, which is grittier, tougher. Then The River, this sprawling double album. But then he does something completely unexpected.
Nebraska.
Nebraska, 1982. Just him. A simple four-track recorder in his bedroom. Stark, haunting, acoustic songs about people on the margins.
It sounds almost like demo tapes.
That's the thing. It has that raw, intimate feel, stripped bare, no studio gloss. It was an incredibly brave move artistically.
Going completely against the commercial grain after building this huge sound.
Totally. He chose creative integrity over potential sales. And it raises that question, doesn't it? What's the cost of that kind of courage for an artist? What does it show us?
What did it show us?
It cemented his reputation. Nebraska proved he was more than a rock star. He was a serious American artist, willing to look into the dark corners, unflinchingly.
And then, ironically, comes his biggest commercial explosion.
Born in the USA in 1984, 7 top 10 singles, massive global phenomenon.
But famously misunderstood.
Massively. That title track, heard by so many as this jingoistic, patriotic anthem.
When it's actually a really angry, critical song about Vietnam vets being forgotten and discarded.
Exactly. The lyrics are right there, but the booming chorus and the Reagan-era context just overwhelmed the nuance for a lot of people.
What did he take away from that, according to the book?
A huge lesson, I think, about art and commerce, how your work can be interpreted or misinterpreted on a mass scale, and the responsibility that comes with having that kind of enormous platform. Your message isn't always received the way you intended.
So looking across this whole life, this whole career laid out in the book, what's the core philosophy driving him? What really makes him tick?
Well, his roots are clearly everything. That working class background informs his whole worldview. Belief in the dignity of work, the importance of community.
And the American dream.
Both sides of it. The promise, absolutely, but also the failures, the people left behind. He sees his role, I think, as a chronicler, a truth teller about that experience, giving voice to the voiceless.
And what about his personal motivations? What's driving him internally?
He's very open about this. A huge part is trying to understand and maybe break free from his family's emotional history, especially his relationship with his father.
Right, that shadow looms large.
It really does. And also this deep need for connection, for community. And fundamentally, using art to make sense of it all, to take the pain, the confusion, the joy, and transform it into something meaningful.
He has this phrase, constructive wallowing.
Yeah, I love that. It's like, okay, feel the difficult stuff, lean into it, don't run away, but then do the work. Use therapy, use self-examination, figure it out. Don't just stay stuck in it.
And music was the main tool for that.
His primary coping mechanism, for sure. Channeling all that internal struggle, all that observation into the songs. Is how he processed the world.
Which leads to maybe the most powerful revelation in the book.
His lifelong battle with depression.
Yeah, which he explicitly connects to his father. He inherited that black dog, as Churchill called it.
And his decision later in life to finally seek consistent therapy and medication, that was a fundamental turning point for him personally. He describes it as life-altering.
And incredibly brave to share so openly.
Hugely brave. Think about the impact. A guy like Springsteen, this icon of masculinity and rock and roll, saying, I struggle with depression and I get help.
It must have helped so many people feel less alone, less ashamed.
Absolutely. It raises that whole question about vulnerability, especially for famous men. His openness didn't just make his art richer. It actively helped destigmatize mental health for millions. It gave people permission, in a way.
He also talks about finding stability later in life.
Right. In his marriage to Patti Shalfa, who's also in the E Street Band, of course, and becoming a father.
And consciously trying not to repeat the pattern.
Exactly. Making a deliberate effort to be a different kind of father than his own was. More present, more emotionally available. It's this powerful idea that you can work to heal those generational wounds.
It's an incredible arc. Now, the book presents this very personal, unflinchingly honest account, as he says.
Yes, though it's always good to remember, isn't it? Even the most honest memoir is still a perspective. It's his telling, his lens on these complex relationships and events. Powerful and vulnerable, yes, but still subjective.
Good point. Okay, let's pivot to the listener. Why should someone, maybe not even a huge Springsteen fan, care about this story? What are the big human lessons here?
That's a great question. Because the lessons are really universal, I think. They go way beyond rock and roll.
So let's identify maybe three pivotal turning points in his life that really stand out from the book, moments that dramatically shifted things for him.
Okay, three big ones. First, I'd have to say that initial spark, seeing Elvis, getting the guitar from his mother, that wasn't just a childhood whim. It was the inciting incident for his entire life's purpose. It set the trajectory.
The moment the universe pointed him towards music.
Pretty much. Second, definitely the whole period around Born to Run. The intense pressure, the make or break stakes, the grueling creative process, and then the explosion of fang that followed. That crucible forged the artist and the icon, but also saddled him with immense expectations he wrestled with for years.
Right, it changed everything, inside and out. And a third.
This might be two things rolled into one, but it feels connected. The artistic courage of making Nebraska, that stark non-commercial album, and the personal courage later on of confronting his depression head-on and seeking help, both represent a profound commitment to authenticity, to facing difficult truths rather than running from them, both in his art and his life.
Choosing integrity over ease, in a way.
Exactly. Those moments reveal his core character, I think.
So reflecting on all this, what can we as listeners, just living our own lives, take away from his journey?
Well, first, there's the power of authentic self-expression. Springsteen's success wasn't about chasing trends. It was about digging deep into his own experience, his own roots, his own struggles.
Being unapologetically himself?
Yes. And he shows that when you're authentic, even with the messy parts, that's when you truly connect with others. That's when the work resonates.
Okay, what else?
Then there's confronting family patterns. His whole life seems like this long, often painful, process of understanding his father and the emotional legacy of his family.
And trying to change things for his own kids.
Right. It's a powerful example that we don't have to be prisoners of our past.
Yeah.
We can examine those inherited patterns, understand them, and consciously choose to break the cycle. It's hard work, but possible.
That's huge. And the mental health aspect.
Absolutely crucial. The necessity of mental health care. His openness about depression and therapy is monumental. He shows seeking help isn't weakness, it's strength. It's self-preservation. It encourages everyone to take their mental health seriously.
Destigmatization in action.
Big time. And maybe one more. The importance of community and hard work. The E Street Band wasn't just backup, it was his tribe, his sacred vow. Finding those people who support and challenge you is vital.
And the work ethic.
Oh, yeah. His story completely demolishes any myth of overnight success.
Yeah.
It was relentless, grinding work year after year, craftsmanship, discipline.
So his impact goes beyond just the music charts.
Immensely. Culturally, his songs are woven into the fabric of America. They're the soundtrack for countless working class lives, making people feel seen.
He's also used his platform, hasn't he?
Responsibly, I'd say. Politically active at times, like canceling shows in North Carolina over discriminatory laws. Not necessarily telling people what to think, but living his values, using his voice when he felt it mattered.
It's really about that overall human legacy, isn't it?
I think so. Achieving that level of fame while staying true to his roots, being vulnerable about his struggles, doing the personal work to heal. It's a powerful model. His personal transformation fueled his art, and both have impacted millions.
Okay, let's try to distill this down. If you had to pick three final takeaways from this deep dive into Born to Run, what would they be? Structured as, say, an emotional insight, an intellectual one, and a universal one.
Okay, good challenge. Let's see. For the emotional insight, I'd say it's the profound possibility of healing generational wounds. His struggle to understand and ultimately find peace with his father and his effort to be a different parent himself shows that breaking painful family cycles, while incredibly difficult, is achievable and deeply meaningful.
The power to change the emotional script.
That's exactly. For the intellectual insight, it has to be the way he demonstrates how art can transform suffering into meaning. He didn't just endure his struggles with depression, his family conflicts, or his observations of hardship. He actively channeled them, metabolized them into songs that not only helped him cope, but offered understanding and connection to millions. Pain can be fuel for profound creation.
Turning demons into muses.
In a way, yes. And for the universal insight, The most practical, universally applicable lesson is probably the courage required for true authenticity, especially when it involves confronting your deepest flaws and seeking help. His journey shows that facing our inner darkness, our mental health struggles, our difficult histories, rather than running, is the path not only to personal wholeness, but also to making our most meaningful contributions to the world.
So confronting the wounds is the way through, not around.
That seems to be the core message. His willingness to be vulnerable, to do the work, didn't just save him. It unlocked the art that defines his legacy.
A powerful note to end on.
Join us next time for a new episode featuring another world-renowned individual, a new book, and a new idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Acontra Foundation.